Welcome to this podcast from Mölnlycke. My name is Phil Morrissey. I'm the Medical and Professional Affairs Manager for Mölnlycke in Australia and New Zealand. Today, we have a discussion between two Australian healthcare professionals, Sarah Sage, who is the Wound Care CNC at the Royal Melbourne Hospital, and Eva Straunton, who is a hospital podiatrist, also at the Royal Melbourne Hospital. Today, the discussion is centred around skin assessment and risk assessment, but not only for the feet, but considerations around the patient's environment as well. Listen to some strategies for patient assessment and risk assessment from Sarah and Eva. Welcome, Sarah and Eva. Sarah, I might begin by asking you to outline some of the considerations when you're looking at doing a risk assessment and skin assessment on a patient. And Eva, I'd love to hear some of your thoughts as well.
So when I'm doing a risk assessment and a skin assessment, so two separate activities, but I do them at the same time, I do them concurrently. The first thing I look at is the patient and speak to the patient. Obviously, I want to look at their skin. I want to look for any red marks. I want to look for any dryness, sweats, any of that sort of thing that would change that person. So if I'm looking, so I do a highlight of the bony prominences and I'm looking for red marks. That's the key thing. Then I want to see, does that red mark blanch? So I'll be looking at, you know, the shoulders, the hips, the bottom, the heels, and I want to see, and I want to touch the skin. So I want to see if it's, you know, I want to know how good that, you know, if they're cooler, if they respond to pressure, if it's painful when I touch them, what the quality of the sensation is when I touch that skin. Is that pretty consistent with what you're doing, Eva, on the foot?
Absolutely. I think when we start, when we do a risk assessment and a skin assessment of the foot, I think we walk into a room or we walk into a patient and we look at the patient in their environment. And I think that is one of the key things that we teach all our staff, is that often a patient will have factors that will predispose them to having pressure injuries, but there are a lot of environmental factors that we create by being in an unfamiliar bed, putting, you know, a different devices, medical devices on, you know, non-slip socks, TEDs, things like that onto a foot particularly, that can actually increase their risk of a pressure injury. So we really like to look at them as we walk in and in that new environment that they're in. So we will, you know, make sure that the lights are on. We bring the bed up. We make sure we take the socks off. The amount of times that we've seen patients that have had, you know, a risk assessment or a skin assessment and the socks have stayed on is, you know, quite frightening. But I think what we do is we take everything off and then we just check the feet. The greatest gift for a patient that has, in particular, diabetic foot disease is actually looking at their feet, because they can't feel that, you know, often they have peripheral neuropathy, so they can't feel. So if you can actually look at the foot for them and actually check the bottom of the foot, that does, you can identify so many risk factors in that just by taking their socks off. So we check the bed length. We check, you know, what's going on with the bed sheets, and making sure that, you know, if there's a bed cradle available or whether that fits in with the pressure mattress that we've put on. So we take, we do a skin assessment, we, socks are off, and we you know, check the heels. We check in between the toes. We check for bony prominences, so bunions, claw toes, hammer toes, callus corns, things like that, areas that we know are prone to pressure, or, you know, pre-existing hair areas of high pressure, we check. And then we then talk to the patient and see if they've had any, you know, past history of pressure injuries. We will then move on to other assessments that will then give us more of an indication about whether they have a, you know, peripheral neuropathy or vascular disease that puts them at those higher risks. But just that visual and the checking and the, you know, checking for blanching is just so important.
So you start with the patient experience and their own understanding of their foot skin as well, generally.
Absolutely.
Yeah. So I do the same thing. So I'm like, are they sore? Is there anything that bothers them when they sit in a chair? Do they lean to one side? Do they sleep on one side more than the other side, for example? You also talked about the bed length, which is one of the banes of my existence. Yep. So what I find really tricky is a lot of patients don't know their height.
Yeah.
Or they know it in imperial measurements, and I cannot convert that in my head. So the thing I think is really interesting is a standard mattress is fine for someone who's 175 centimetres and under. tall.
Yeah.
And then if you've got an air mattress, it's probably 170 centimetres and under because you've reduced the length of their bed when they're sitting up. So do you look for the height or do you just sort of see how the patient is situated in bed and go, oh, you've slid down, you probably are a bit tall for that bed? Or
I think it's a bit of both. In where I work, we have we know our patients. So we know whether a patient is really tall. I'm quite tall. So if they're taller than me, then I know that these are the people that we need to be looking out for. But it is very much even a not so tall person in a bed can slide down. And the amount of ward rounds I've done, walked into the room and the patient's heel or their foot is smashed up against the end of that bed head. And having a bed head is actually something not a lot of people have bed heads at home. And so they're not used to even having that pressure, that barrier.
Yeah.
And so, and because we've put the bed head on for a reason, so, you know, a fall or a safety reason, but often,
just to hang your other equipment on.
Yeah, I feel like it's just to put the hand hygiene on. But, it can often do so much more damage. So, and we are forever lengthening the beds, you know, trying to adjust the bed so we can give that patient more, more length. But also the patient can slide down that bed. Mm. And especially if we have made them immobile because they have a foot wound that we're trying to heal, they're in bed this whole time. So they slide down and then it's really hard to get them back up in the bed safely without causing a pressure injury somewhere else, because we know friction and shear is a huge, causes pressure injuries. So we are asking them to use their heels to shuffle up the bed. So it's just so counterintuitive of, having the bed, having an appropriate length bed is just so vital for patients.
I think also like what you're saying as well is like we've talked about the patient, but actually we're talking about the environment they're in. And so I remember going to a conference, and I think it was Keith Harding was saying that the best practice is what you can achieve in that setting. And so the environment we create for that person is so critical that I think we forget about that in our general assessments, or not us, but, in principle, that can be forgotten, that the physical environment, the logistical environment, the noise, the social environment that's there can also have an impact. Because it sounds like, for me, the other thing is I think it's a bed mechanics, for example. So I think when I'm there and I'm teaching a nurse at the bedside, my first thing is often, well, let's get the patient in bed, or let's get the bed up, because you can't be looking at the bottom of someone's heel if you're bending over. You need to crouch down. You need to use the bed mechanics to lift the heel up or to stop the sliding down. And I find, although it's not part of the assessment, that bedside education and protecting themselves is a really key part of it as well, because I think my theory is that because they forget about it, that's why they don't want to hurt themselves. Sometimes that's why the heel gets missed or those sorts of things.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think some people, we do a lot of interventions, pressure injury prevention, but it's understanding why we're intervening and what we're doing. So, not everyone needs an air mattress, prophylactic silicone dressings, bed cradle, knee breaks, but understanding why each thing works for that particular person is really important. And I think sometimes that is, we have great pressure injury prevention package and it is something that we highlight to all our nursing staff. But the amount of people that rotate through, sometimes bedside education, people remember that. And so having podiatry work with the nurses, especially when it comes to staging and preventative measures is really important. I was on a ward round the other day and a clinical educator was teaching a nurse how to do a VAC dressing, and I interrupted and said
enhanced the education
by just advising the nurse that when you use a VAC dressing, for example, there's a tube, and so often we will see a VAC dressing with a crepe wrapped around the tube, around the leg, and they do that because they don't want the patient to fall. Mm. And so what I was just told the nurse is that whatever you do, do not tape that tube down, because we take that crepe off 3 days later and there is a dint and a pressure injury that we are going to really struggle to heal. So it's that day-to-day bedside education as well that's really useful.
Yeah, and I think when I walk into it, it's like I do clock their devices and it's like I'm going to have to pull this back or lift this up or readjust it. So it's also an opportunity to sort of see what those risk factors are and incorporate them, but also to let the patient know I'm going to be touching that or dealing with that on a regular basis or potentially adjusting it. So if I walk in, I see a nasogastric tube, which is current problem in the hospital, really too tight against the nose, then it's an opportunity to take that tape off and replace it and immediately reduce that risk.
Yeah.
So that's one of the things that I'll probably do when I walk in. Do you look for like bogginess or skin texture as well when you're doing
Absolutely. Yeah. So we'll obviously look for, you know, redness and, you know, areas of pressure, callus, and but it is those, you know, the purple or the, you know, feeling the skin and you knowing that there has been some damage there that it hasn't quite shown up yet. We know that pressure injuries take a long time to, they take a short time to develop, but they can take some time to show themselves. And I think that that is really important. That's why we check. And I guess it going back to what I said about the, we intervene, we put the Mepilex heels on or we put the prophylactic heel dressings on, that's not our job done. We still need to check them. So it's so important that we remove the stocking, we check underneath, and that is, you know, we can't just say tick, 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 we've done the things. We need to continue to check, and it's everyone's responsibility. And I think that that's, you know, it is something that is often, you know, feels or historically been a nurse's responsibility, but it's not. It's absolutely everyone's. It's allied health, it's nursing and medical. And I think we all should be in there looking and checking the patients. And I think the low threshold for reporting is really important because it provides a culture that is safe.
Yeah.
And, you know, we review those risk management tools and we see great reporting. We're happy for that. And we would rather look at something and then it not be, you know, an issue rather than there's no penalizing for reporting. It's really important.
Yeah, exactly. Thing I would probably, I'm just thinking about like things that I come across that I'd love to change. And probably for me, it's also knowing the limitations of some of our interventions. So one of the things I'm seeing frequently at the moment is people with incontinence. And so they're putting the prophylactic dressing halfway up the back, which is great for that area, but not going to do anything for the sacrum. Yeah. And so they're trying to not have to cause a problem because of the incontinence, but they don't want to say that the dressing may not be appropriate for that person. And I think, you know, you're talking about the heel dressing. So, but we also elevate on pillows and then see how things work. So I find that, do you think there's anything that there's limitations that we would be better at their bedside to educate about as well?
Absolutely. We've seen a lot of times, you know, you think about a patient, you know, it's just, it's there as a whole. We've had some patients that have come back from theatre and they may have TEDs on because that was their, you know, medically prescribed. And we've seen prophylactic dressings on the outside of the TEDs. So whilst the person that's done that has thought that they've ticked the box to understand, you know, to prevent something, what they haven't quite captured is A, do we need the TEDs or do we need those anti-embolized
Do we need both
dressings?
Of them?
Do we need both? And what can we be doing that we can, it's just trying to, it's making sure that people go into a situation and review the patient and think and challenge. I think it's important to ask the questions and challenge people or ask why are we doing this because it doesn't make sense to you.
Yeah. I think the other one I've come across is, again, a device-related one is catheters. So the issue was, oh, do I have to check the entry site of the catheter to see that's okay? And I was like, yeah, because that's where the pressure injury happens. But I think they're like, but, you know, the patient's young and I don't want to be looking at their groin or something like that, or they don't know how to have that conversation. So, you know, like how do you reassess when maybe they don't need that intervention anymore? How do you de-prescribe the thing?
Yeah.
That's the challenge as well.
Yeah. And I think sometimes in, you know, nursing and allied health, that it's hard to question medical, but I think it's really important that you're doing that from a patient safety or patient advocacy know, point of view.
Some very interesting information. I do have a further question for you both. How do you include the patient in the role of patient assessment?
Hopefully they're part of it. Hopefully they're not sitting silently when we're doing the skin assessment and the bed assessment and the bed measuring and seeing. And hopefully they're part of that process and giving us information and telling us how they feel. You know, when I'm there, they normally go, oh, I don't like having my legs up, or I don't like having the head of the bed up, or, you know, that sort of thing. So hopefully that we can have that as part of the ongoing assessment and the conversation. I think I've also mentioned how we like to talk about orientating patients to being a patient. So this is how we'll come and see you. We'll see you every hour and we'll check on you. But you let us know if you've got any pain. I think it's probably difficult in your area where patients are neuropathic and they can't tell you about the pain. They just,
Yeah, absolutely. They sort of like, oh, this bumped my foot and I didn't notice. We have a lot of patients that have been inpatients or, you know, have been patients for in and out of hospital quite a lot. So they actually know what they want and what they don't want. And I think that that is really important that we always ask them. So, you know, rather than having it is impossible to have a prescription of pressure injury preventions because they will not work for every person, especially on the foot. So, you know, we offer a patient a air mattress. We don't tell them that they're having one. We offer it to them. Then they have that choice to decide. So we go through why we would like to use a pressure in an air mattress, and then they understand the risks. Yeah. Often in our cohort of patients, we're requesting people rest in bed because of their foot wound or foot complication. So, you know, we have to balance up that risk, and so that's what we talk to them about. And they are really quite receptive. You know, we have our patients that come in and they're absolutely firm no, but they also then know what they need to do in order to protect themselves. We haven't had a lot of people find the prophylactic silicone dressings on the heels quite comfortable. Yep. They don't generally have any issues with those. But we educate them as to why we're putting them on.
Yep.
This is because you're in bed where, you know, the heel is a really high pressure injury area. We have to protect it. You've already got a foot complication. We really need to prevent any other foot complication as best we can.
Yep.
And they're very understanding. And I think it's just ensuring that they understand why you're doing these things to them, because I feel like when they come into hospital, they've already had, you know, they've had bloods drawn, they've had x-rays, they've got so many things that are done to them that they need to be involved. And and I think those are the patients that we get better outcomes. And a better outcome for me is patient leaving hospital without a hospital acquired pressure injury.
Yeah, absolutely. I think it's also about that opportunity to find out what's important to them. So some of my patients, yes, they also know what they don't want. So an air mattress refuser is a very common thing because they're cold. And so we had a situation in one of our wards that you might be aware of where we had an increase in our pressure injuries on the tips of the toes. And when it was nothing to do with not having a bed cradle, that probably helped, but actually it was because there was a problem with the thermostat. And so at night the thermostat hit 5 degrees and air mattresses circulate room temperature air. And so they were freezing cold.
Yeah.
So they were having like 6 or 7 blankets to not be cold in bed. And so the weight of that caused additional pressure injury. So the solution was actually fixing the thermostat, not anything else really, but it's kind of understanding what's going on for that person.
Yeah.
And I think, one of the other things I'm finding when we're investigating pressure injuries is often it's not because people didn't know what they needed to do. It's often because the patient didn't want it for whatever reason. So they had a catastrophic illness, they were in a lot of pain, maybe they're at the end of their life, maybe they had delirium and they couldn't participate in the same way that your patients might. And so there was a respectfulness of the staff wanting to let the patient just sleep because they hadn't slept for 16 hours and not disturb them. Or I think the relative had requested to do some of the churning because they'd been hospitalized for 24 days and they're just sick of having people around them.
Yeah.
So no one kind of checked, did they do it right? Or, you know, did they prioritize their sleep over something else? So it was about balancing risk. And I think the other thing is, what is the risk tolerance?
Yeah.
Because I think sometimes people come to hospital and we're like, okay, we're going to prevent 100% of all of your harm from falls, from pain, from pressure injuries, from infections. And sometimes we're actually trading one against the other.
Yeah.
And so sometimes it is a totally legitimate thing to trade one against the other.
Yeah.
And the example I might give is an amputee. And often when you're fitting that, when the prosthetics team are fitting that new prosthetic limb, they will get a small stage 1 or 2 pressure injury where they're adjusting where that socket is fitting.
Yeah.
And that helps them understand what is the best fit for that patient.
Yeah.
So it's not necessarily, it is an avoidable pressure injury, but the way to avoid it is to not put a prosthetic limb on, and that's not an acceptable outcome, right?
Yeah.
So,
well, we, you know, in the foot as well, we do that, you know, quite often is how, you know, what we're willing to forego in order to, you know, protect the patient and protect and, you know, assist the wound from healing. But, you know, I think asking that the patient the greatest thing that you can ever do is ask a patient what they want and what they think. Yep. Because, you know, they are often, and especially if a patient has had a pressure injury before or still have a pressure injury. So if they've come in to hospital and they still have a pressure injury and then we come in and, you know, decide that we need to do X, Y, and Z and they have tried all those things, you know, without talking to them and understanding what they've been through, it's really important that we are respectful and understanding of what, you know, they're – I always say this, you know, I have students and they'll, you know, they'll put a dressing on a patient's foot and they won't, and the patient will, you can see the patient really wants to tell them how to do it. And then the student really doesn't want them to be telling, be told how to do it. And I will just say that you need to actually listen to the patient. They have dressed their foot more than you have ever dressed your foot. So you need to listen to.
And they're living with the consequences of whatever you're doing, right?
That's right. So, so they'll go home and change it anyway. But yeah, so I think, you know, they're, you know, as far as the patient should is the focus and it's not just their, you know, it's not just their pressure injury or their, you know, the hole in their foot or whatever. We need to, you know, bring them to the forefront of our care, which I think, you know, we are working towards and we definitely are doing.
I think we're getting better at it. It's something we can still get better at all the time, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
But we're definitely getting better at it over time. Okay. I think it just reminds me of a patient I saw yesterday for not a wound but a edema problem. And when they referred, it was like, yep, she doesn't want to do anything. She'll just tell you to go away, don't bother, blah, blah, blah. So I went in and it was very different. I mean, I did have a long conversation with her. She didn't want to do anything. They were correct. That's fine. She'd had polio as a child and she couldn't, she had skin sensitivity. So she couldn't tolerate compression. She tried it five times. So it's not really a reasonable expectation to go, she just doesn't want to do anything you suggest. It was like, she'd given it a fair crack. And so it's not, I think it's like, well, would I make that choice? And I think about myself as like, do I floss my teeth every day or do I skip a day occasionally? Like, but you got to be, you got to see yourself as the real person, not the perfect patient.
Yeah.
Thank you very much, Sarah and Eva, on behalf of Mölnlycke, for a great discussion. Thank you both for your expertise and thank you for your time. To those listening, further explore clinicallearning.com for Mölnlycke for further podcasts, webinars, and e-learning activities. Mölnlycke looks forward to providing you further clinical support and educational information the next time you're able to join us. Thank you very much.